With the Catalonian region of Spain inching toward possible independence, WAMC's Alan Chartok caught up with Dr. Susan DiGiacomo, a professor with local ties who teaches outside Barcelona and is a member of the Catalan National Assembly.
Longtime listener to WAMC, Dr. Susan DiGiacomo is on the phone with us. Well, Susan, where are you now?
I'm in Barcelona now.
Well, I love Barcelona. It's one of my favorite cities in the world, and I always like to think if I could retire somewhere and had to outside of the United States, that would be a city. So what are you doing there?
I'm translating a document for the Catalan National Assembly.
That sounds fascinating, because we've been seeing Catalonians in a move, maybe a feint, maybe not, that they'd like to have separation. Is it serious?
It's not a feint. It's real. Independence has been a word in the Catalan political lexicon for a long time, since the middle 1980s. But it has been sort of on the margins of political activity, and it's been seen more as a long-range goal than as anything else until recently.
Why do they want independence?
This goes back a long way. Let me start with the most recent events. In 2003, when the Socialist Party in Catalonia won the elections to the Catalan Parliament, they decided that it was a good time, since there was a socialist government also in Madrid, to reformulate, to update the Catalan Statute of Autonomy, which is the legal framework that gives Catalonia the right to govern its own affairs at home. That original document, the original Statute of Autonomy, which was approved in 1979, in the shadow of the Franco regime, had become outdated, and it was necessary to bring it up to date, and the idea was to strike while the iron is hot, to take advantage of the fact that there was, at least so it seemed, a friendly government in Madrid. This didn't work out as it was expected to. The Catalan Parliament approved a new statute. This was sent to Madrid, where it was very significantly altered and weakened in its passage through the Spanish Parliament. And then it was brought back to Catalonia, where it was approved, not with a great deal of enthusiasm, by Catalan voters in a referendum. Immediately, a party of the far right challenged the constitutionality of this document. And from 2006 until 2010, it languished in the Constitutional Court. A Constitutional Court, by the way, which was composed of at least half of its justices serving on expired terms of office. And in June of 2010, the Constitutional Court finally gave its decision. And what it did was to annul the most significant articles of the Statute of Autonomy. This was a very big disappointment, and it brought lots of people very suddenly to the conclusion that there was no way to remain within the Spanish state on terms that didn't require Catalonia to surrender almost everything of importance: language, culture, economy, identity.
What language do the Catalonians use?
Catalans have two languages. Spanish is a language that is widely spoken here, but the language that is proper to Catalonia, Catalonia's own indigenous language, is Catalan. This is the language that is taught in the school systems.
Huh. Interesting. So let me ask you this, Susan, if I may. Is there a possibility that if this thing really breaks up, that there'll be a civil war?
I find this very, very remote as a possibility. The Spanish state is part of the European Union. And the European Union's main reason for existing is to preserve the peace in a continent that was torn apart by two world wars during the 20th century. There has been some saber rattling from Madrid over the past several weeks, and it concerns us, and it should, But I think that military intervention, particularly in the current circumstances, particularly when Spain's credit in the European Union and abroad is pretty low, I don't think that military intervention is a real possibility here.
So what do the Catalans have going for them in order to bring Madrid to heel?
We have our connections to the European Union. We have public opinion, which is something that the Catalan National Assembly works very hard on. And we have international law on our side.
You keep saying we. You're a professor of anthropology, but why are you saying we if you're studying them?
Because I've been studying politics in Catalonia for a very long time. I started coming here at the very end of the Franco regime, and I was here during significant parts of the transition to democracy in the late 1970s and early 1980s. And I live and work here. This is my country of adoption.
And so you'll be there. I know that when we have spoken in the past, you've been, I guess, in Amherst. And so are you there as a potential transplant?
I have tenure in a Catalan university. So I live here most of the year round. I spend some time in the United States during the summer, around Christmas time and in January.
Yeah.
But most of my year is spent working here.
Is there anything dangerous about what you do?
I've never felt threatened. My colleagues at the university are fully aware of what I do and how I feel about it, and they support me. And I've never felt personally threatened as an individual that is told to cease and desist any form of activity. I belong to an organization which is perfectly legal, and which is the Catalan National Assembly. I don't see any danger for myself in this.
Tell everybody, because a lot of us have been in Barcelona, as I said before, a wonderful city, just great. But there is a different feeling when you're in Barcelona than when you're in the rest of Spain. What is that? Because Barcelona...
It's Catalonia.
Because Barcelona sounds, you know, feels like Paris to me. You know, you walk the streets, it's urbane, it's quite remarkable. Is it just because of that difference in where everybody started?
It's interesting that you mentioned Paris. Catalonia is located on the periphery of the Iberian Peninsula. And historically, it has always looked northward towards Europe rather than inwards toward Madrid. During the Franco regime, France was a point of reference politically, culturally, for many Catalans. And they see themselves in this way as much more outward-looking rather than inward-looking.
So what was the relationship between Franco, a fierce dictator with, you know, Nazi associations for many people, in his relationship with Spain and with the Catalans? Was it different?
The Civil War was many conflicts in one. There was certainly a class conflict involved, but there was also a national conflict. And part of what the Civil War was about was reducing Catalonia, which during the Second Spanish Republic from 1931 to 1939 was autonomous under the government of the Second Republic. And one of Franco's great enemies was the Rojo Separatista, as he expressed it, the Red Separatist. That is, the defender of working class rights, who was also a Catalan nationalist. And after the Civil War, Franco's repression fell very, very heavily on Catalonia. The first thing that happened was, of course, that the Catalan government was dissolved, but also many Catalan institutions were completely dismantled. The universities were closed. The language was prohibited. And the transition to democracy after Franco's death in Catalonia was in large measure about recovering those lost rights. And it became obvious that the only way a transition to democracy was going to be legitimate was, in fact, if Catalan autonomy were restored.
Now you get a king who is handpicked by Franco, but who turns his back on all of that and starts talking democracy. Now, how did that affect the Catalans?
The king had for a long time a lot of credit because he is widely regarded as the person who stood between a nascent Spanish democracy and an attempted military coup in February of 1981, when a group of military officers burst into the parliament chamber in Madrid and held the Spanish parliament hostage at gunpoint. Several hours went by, then the king appeared on television, finally, and said, basically, they will take this country away from us over my dead body. And so for a long time, the king was very, very well regarded as someone who had saved democracy. His credit has shrunk considerably of late as a number of scandals have come to light.
What were the scandals?
One of his sons-in-law has been involved in embezzlement schemes involving very large amounts of public funds. He himself, having made statements about how deeply he's concerned by the way in which the crisis is affecting Spanish families, was then discovered this summer to be on safari in Botswana shooting elephants. And nobody knew where he was or how much this was costing. And it dealt a very serious blow to his personal credibility.
And on the Catalan question, where is he?
On the Catalan question, he has tried to become part of the discussion, which is not exactly legitimate. The king is the head of state, and he's supposed to remain above politics. This is a constitutional monarchy. But he did make some statements to the effect that this is a time of crisis. We should all be pulling together. We should all be thinking about the things that unite us and not about the things that separate us.
Is there any way of measuring what world public opinion on the potential for this split is? I'm baiting you, of course, because I think because I don't think I hear much.
Well, one of the interesting things is that Catalonia has now become a recognizable word. Barcelona is well known outside of Spain. Catalonia is not. But there have been a few articles in the New York Times, which I've been following, and it's now possible for a subscriber to the New York Times to sign up for news alerts for articles that contain as a keyword either Catalonia or Artur Mas, which is the name of the Catalan president.
In fact, not only can you do that for the New York Times, you go on Google, you can put that word keyword in too and be informed anytime anybody has a story on that. Okay, so let me go back to Franco for a moment. This is a very bad time for Spain, obviously. You know, a lot of unemployment, a lot of problems, as you've been mentioning. So it comes out of a terrible dictatorship. I remember we were there, as you were, late in the game when Franco was still there. And with the exception of the people he didn't like, it was a fairly orderly society. With democracy comes, you know, some of the other stuff that we all put up with. Do you sense, Susan, and I know your political perspective, which is, I think it's fair to say, left-center. Do you think that you're seeing any, in Spain as a whole, in with the Catalans, a mourning for the old days?
Nostalgia for the Franco regime?
Yes.
There is some of that, yes. It is present. You hear it in some of the declarations made recently by active military officers and retired military officers to the extent that there should be a state of siege.
I'm sorry, what do you mean state of siege?
The establishment of military control.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That is, sending in the army, relieving the Catalan police of their command and essentially taking over. And one of the Spanish members of the European Parliament recently made some declarations on a television program, which he later repeated in a letter to his colleagues in the European Parliament, that if Catalonia so much as attempted to hold a referendum on independence, the Spanish state should send in the army, remove the ballot boxes, arrest the government, and that would be the end of it. Later on, he said that he was merely being ironic and his words were taken too literally, but this, given the source of these comments, given the person who made them, it seems to reveal a significant degree of nostalgia.
What do you expect to happen?
What I expect to happen is that in the elections of November 25th, parties that support holding a national referendum, a Catalan referendum on Catalan independence, will win much more than an absolute majority, and this will give the parliament that emerges from those elections a popular mandate to go ahead and try to hold a referendum. This will not be easy because we expect that the Spanish state will attempt to withhold the electoral census.
I have to say, Professor Susan DiGiacomo, who I've been corresponding with for years here in the States, I want to thank you for bringing us all up to date on this most fascinating story. It's just great to have you over there, and I hope we can speak again.
Thank you. I would be delighted to speak again and keep you up to date on what is happening here.
That was WAMC's Alan Chartok speaking with Dr. Susan DiGiacomo about the push for Catalonian independence in Spain. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.